In slide 46, the registers of which the asynchronous word component 8250 consists are presented. Basically, they are 8 registers located in 8 consecutive addresses of the I/O memory space, and the basic address is 3F8 expressed in hexadecimal codification for mapping the serial port COM1 of the PC, and 2E8 for the second serial port, again in the personal computer. In our explanation, we will refer to it as a base address. Some of these registers can be only read, other ones can be only written. Some of them can allow to be both read and written, sometimes depending on specific bits that are located in one specific register that is called the line control register. In the table we have 5 columns. The first indicates the address at which the register or the couple of registers are located. Then we have those registers that can be read or written at those addresses. In the fourth and the fifth column, we indicate those registers that can be read and written at those addresses. Starting from the first one of the addresses that are allowed, we see that the RBR, that is the receiver buffer register, the THR, the transmitter hold register, and the DLL are addressed by means of that value. What does it mean, this? If the instruction that is executed is an instruction that basically performs an access to the memory in read mode, the access will be made to the buffer that contains the new data arrived from the partner of the communication. Conversely, if the CPU is executing a write instruction, the address will involve the transmission hold register, that is the buffer that contains the data that must be sent to the external world. But this is true if the DLAB bit in the line control register is set to 0. Otherwise, if this bit is set to 1, the base address refer to the low part of the so-called divisor latch register. We will see in the next slide that this register is composed by 2 parts, a low byte and a high byte, and those values that are written in this register allow to configure the velocity of the communication through the serial port. Coming to the next address, the base address plus 1, it corresponds to the interrupt enable register and can be both read or written if, again, the DLAB bit is equal to 0. Instead, if that bit is 1, the address points to the high part of the divisor latch register. The next registers are not dependent on the value of DLAB. So the value of that bit affects only the first 2 addresses. In base plus 2, we have the interrupt identification register if we are reading the address. That is, we understand what kind of source of particular situation determined the interrupt request to the CPU. If the address is written, we are basically managing the FIFO, often configuring it, but also monitoring its status. Same addresses, same registers are accessed if the DLAB bit is equal to 1. The address base plus 3 is related to the line counter register that concerns several characteristics related to the activity of the line. We will see that we can configure the stop bits to set the parity, the character length that is sent onto the during the communications. The base address plus 4 is related to the modem control. The base address plus 5 is related to the line status register. It cannot be written because this is a register that is set by electronic circuits on the basis of what happens in the device, in the port itself. And every bit has a particular significance. We have already said that there is a bit that says that a byte has arrived and is present in the receiver buffer register. There is another bit that triggers the communication and so on. We will see. Same considerations can be made for the base address plus 6, but related to the modem status. Remember that the component we are describing is able to implement the RS-232 serial communication protocol, so the data communication equipment is taken into account. And finally, we have a scratch register that corresponds to the base address plus 7 that usually is employed as a temporary register or for general purposes, buffering and so on. Looking at slide 47, we see the general architecture of three registers. The first is the divisor latch register. We remember that is located at the base address and at the base address plus 1, since it is a 16-bit register. That is, it must be seen as the sum of two bytes, one located at the base address and one located at the base plus 1 address. And we see that depending on the codification that we insert into it, we can configure the baud rate at which the port exchanges data, ranging from 110 bits per second up to 115,000 approximately bits per second. The second register that is described in this slide is the so-called interrupt enable register. To our purposes, the least significant 4 bits are interesting since they enable the UART component to generate interrupts through the setting of the specific bit. The bit B3 will allow to activate modem status interrupts. The bit B2 will enable interrupts that are related to the status of the receiver line. And the bits B1 and B0 will trigger interrupts related to the presence of a byte that must be written into the transmitter holding register, and instead a byte that has arrived from the external world and that is present in the receiver buffer register. The last register presented in this slide is the IIR, the Interrupt Identification Register. Again, not all the bits are interesting for us, but only the last ones. In particular, the bits B2 and B1 say to us the origin of the interrupt service request. If those bits are 1-1, the reason for the interrupt is related to the receiver line, so we have to monitor to read the line status register. If their value is 1-0, this means that datum is available in the receiver buffer register, therefore we must read it. If their value is 0-1, same situation but related to the transmitting holding register, so that register is empty and we can write the next byte to be transferred to the external world. And finally, 00 is related to the status of the modem, so we have to read the modem status register. The bit B0 says that an interrupt is pending, and the bit B3 says that a timeout interrupt occurred. It is interesting to notice that by reading the register, that is, by reading the bit B0 and the particular couple of bits that identify the interrupt, that interrupt alert is cancelled. So there is the possibility to have a new interrupt, perhaps determined by the same reason, perhaps determined by another possible cause of those that are foreseen in this register itself. In slide 48, some notes about the registers devoted to the control of the FIFO, to the control of the modem, and to the control of the line are given. In particular, the FCR register, the FIFO control register, is made up by 8 bits that are given to control the FIFO memories present in the 16550 device. The least significant bit enables the FIFO. B1 and B2 signal if the acquisition, the reception FIFO, or the transmission FIFO are empty. This is useful to trigger more acquisition in the case of the first FIFO, or more writing the characters to be sent externally in case of the second FIFO. B6 and B7 define the number of the bytes required to set the full FIFO flag. They can be 1, 4, 8, 14. I mean that the FIFO can be considered as a buffer with 14 bytes, 8 bytes, 4 bytes, only 1 byte. This helps to size the amplitude of the buffer that is necessary to keep between the external word transmission, for example, and the internal CPU capability of processing data, just to compensate for the two different elaboration, let's say, capabilities. Or vice versa, the same concept can be applied to the transmission FIFO, and in this case the compensation is between the velocity of the internal CPU and the capability of the external world to receive, to acquire the result of the CPU elaboration. The line control register is used to set the general capability of operation into the line, B1 and B0 define the length of the character that is sent. In the serial communication medium, it can consist of 5, 6, 7, 8 bits. B2 sets the number of the stop bits that are given when the transmission is asynchronous after the characters that it is sent. B4 and B3 set the parity. We know that we can have null parity, odd parity, even parity, so we need a couple of bits to define the different possibilities. B6, if is a set of 1, triggers the presence of a constant voltage level on the communication line equal to the level of a start bit. And since this is the opposite, typically, of a stop bit, to put such a level after a character means break of transmission. B7 bit is the famous DLAB bit that, if 1, allows to make access to the divisor latch register, otherwise it allows the access to the receiver buffer register, the transmission hold register, and the interrupt enable register. In slide 49 we have the description of the line status register. It is a register that is continuously monitored, continuously accessed if the serial port is managed in polling mode, because many of the bits of such a kind of register are significant in terms of situation, status of the register and of the communication that is in progress. For example, B0 means that new, not read character is available in the receiver buffer register, if it is set to 1, of course, and this will trigger a software routine that will catch that byte from the buffer and will store it somewhere in memory. Instead, B5, if 1, says the same thing about the transmission hold register. In other words, we know that to trigger the transmission of a byte, it is necessary that the THR register is empty. This is true both the first time into which the character is sent and when the last character is transmitted out of the port. So, a continuous sampling of such bit allow us to understand if we have to continue to send, to transmit or not. B4 and B3, B2, B1 are related instead to particular conditions into which the transmission could be. Before, if 1 says if a low level is detected on the line longer than a character. In other words, if the duration of the low level voltage that is by convention assigned to the break situation will set that bit to 1. B3, B2 and B1 are related to error conditions. B3 to the framing error, that is, after the character bits and the parity, the expected stop bit is not detected. So the format of the byte that has been carried out is not correct. B2 is related to the parity error, that is, the bit is 1 if the parity bit doesn't correspond to the algorithm shared between transmitter and receiver, and applied to the character bits. B1 is 1 if a character in the receiver buffer register has been overwritten before being read. This is called overrun error, and that is related to a different velocity between the transmitter and the receiver units, and without any possibility of compensating this with, for example, a FIFO memory. MSR is the modem status register that is used to detect the values of the carrier detect bit, the ring indicator, the dataset ready, and the clear to send in the most four significant bits, or if they are switched in the last four significant bits. SCR is the scratch register that, as we have already said, is used to read and write temporary values. The user device that we have still described can be managed from the software point of view in three ways. First of all, a typical port, like a user, can be polled. This means that the line status register will be periodically polled, periodically read, and a new received character or a character to be transmitted or even an error will be signaled by the corresponding bits. Accordingly to the particular situation detected, a software routine will be executed that will elaborate the character, will write the new character to be sent externally to the microprocessor, or the proper management of the anomalous situation will be carried out. Such a kind of policy is adequate for low-medium communication velocities, and clearly implies that very often the CPU will be in busy waiting. The interrupt is more adequate for medium transmission velocities, close to 10 kilobit per second and even more. When the user is managed through interrupt, each of the three previous situations generates an interrupt request. That is, if a character is in the receiver buffer register, an interrupt is raised up. If the transmission hold register is empty, another interrupt is requested. An error, whatever it is, will activate an interrupt routine that will manage the wrong situation accordingly. In any case, the interrupt identification register will be read to adequately serve the interrupt. And finally, there is the possibility that a microprocessor is equipped with a direct memory access that envisions the presence of controllers or coprocessors devoted to manage the handshake between the memory and the particular peripheral that is involved in the data transfer. In this case, the velocities can be very high, since all the activities of the CPU are discarded, are avoided. But such a solution is not always provided, because typically is present only in expensive devices. And now let's enter a little bit more in the details that are related to the software management of the serial port. First of all, looking at the slide 51, we see a list with a lot of initialization of variables to specific values. These variables are those that in the following fragments of code that we will see are referred as, for example, BA, base address, that, as we have already mentioned, is set to 3F8 in hexadecimal code. Then RBR and THR are the receiver buffer register and the transmitter hold register. DLR, L and DLRH are the two bytes that belong to the divisor latch register. IER, that is equal to the basic address plus one, is the interrupt identification register. IIR, that is equal BA plus two, is the interrupt identification register. In other words, these are the values, the constant values, that we will use to refer the memory addresses that allow us to write or to read such a kind of registers. Similar considerations can be done for FCR, the FIFO control register, LCR, the line control register, and NCR, the modem control register, and LSR, that is equal to the basic address plus 5, that is the line status register. The remaining values that are listed in the page are constant values that sometimes allow us to set the velocity, as we will see, or in other cases allow us to set proper bits that helps to configure properly the serial port so as it works as we want. In the slide 52, we show the first thing that it is necessary to prepare when we want to set up the communication through a serial port, in this case a universal asynchronous receiver transmitter device. First of all, we have to set the communication speed, and this requires that we set the proper value in the line control register. So we have the constant value mkdlab that we have defined in the previous slide as 80 hexadecimal, and we load the address of the line control register into the register dx. The successive out al, we remember that this is the accumulator low, into the register dx will write the constant mktlab in the line control register. That is, it will set the dlab bit to 1. And this allows us to write to dlrl the velocity corresponding to the constant value b9600. That is written in the accumulator register AX and is written, stored in two steps by executing the out instruction DXAL, the low part of the constant, and incrementing DX out DXAH, the highest part of the accumulator. So, in this way, we are configuring the velocity of the port to be set at 9600 bit per second. A further initialization concerns the communication mode. In this case, we will store again another constant in the line control register, and this constant is the label std line, let's say standard line. The value of this constant can be found in the previous slide 51 and corresponds to 1b, again coded in hexadecimal. This setup allows to use 8-bit characters with 1-bit stop and even parity check. The successive operation feature the reset of interrupts eventually pending. In fact, moving IIR in the X and successively reading the content of that address, that is reading the interrupt identification register, we know that corresponds to cancelling every interrupt that in this phase of setup of the UART can be only randomly raised up without any specific and concrete situation that required them. Then we configure the FIFO memories, in particular by loading in the accumulator low the free constant makefrt, mkfrr, and mkfn. We reset the FIFO devoted to the transmission, the FIFO devoted to the reception, and we enable them to work properly. These three constants are then stored in the content of the register DX that was loaded with the address of the FIFO control register. The successive instruction is called Agancha Interrupt UART. This is a subroutine that defines the specific address into which the program must jump when an interrupt, both in the case of transmission and in the case of reception, is required by the serial port. But the explanation of the mechanism and of all the hardware details that are involved is postponed to successive slides. The last operation that is necessary to be performed concerns the enabling of the port to the generation of the interrupt. This is done by loading in the accumulator low the two constants MKEIT and MKEIR that perform the enabling to generate interrupt in case of transmission and in case of reception. In particular, we know when the transmitter hold register is empty and when the receiver buffer register is filled with a character. The two values are then written in the content of the register DX, that is the address of the interrupt enable register. In such a way, we have completely configured the serial port so as to work with a certain communication speed, with a character that has certain characteristics in terms of bits, stop bits, and parity. We reset the eventual pending interrupts. We have properly configured the FIFO memories, and we have set up the address to which the routine will jump in case of interrupts, and finally we have enabled the port itself to generate interrupts in case of transmission and reception. In the slide 53, the general concept on which the routine that sets the address of the interrupt service to the serial port is shown. This general idea is divided in two phases that we will find when we will look at the code. The first one is set during the configuration of the port. In that moment, the address of the routine devoted to the management of the interrupt is split in two parts. an high part that is stored into a suitable register specifically dedicated in the architecture of the microprocessor we are considering to managing a part of the address, the highest one, because the lowest one is devoted to identify specifically each peripheral that is responsible for generating the interrupt request. So basically, the instruction that will be executed is a store of the highest part of the address into that register. The second phase of this first part, into which we configure the port, consists in sending the lowest part of the address of the routine to which we are interested to the specific peripheral, so as to, let's say, implicitly asking to it that during the interrupt request it will return such a part of the address to the main CPU. The peripherals of which we are talking about are the parallel port, the serial port, timers, counters, and so on. When we say that we send this address, this part of the address to the peripheral, simply we mean that we are writing this part of the address into a specific register of the peripheral itself, following a specific procedure that allows the peripheral to recognize that that value correspond to the address of its own request of the interrupt service. The second part of such an approach is executed directly during the interrupt management. In this moment, the CPU will recover the high part of the interrupt address from the dedicated register, and at the same time will receive on the data bus from the specific peripheral that requested the interrupt service the lowest part of the address, so as to join the two parts and to be able to jump in the proper area of memory where the code specifically conceived for the interrupt has been stored. We will see that there is an handshake of signals that allow the CPU and the specific peripheral involved in such a management to recognize reciprocally that the interrupt has been sent to the CPU, and from the CPU point of view the particular peripheral that raised up the specific request. The last part of the slide shows how the memory is organized to foresee the possibility that many peripheral feature an interrupt request, considering that as an example, I mean the address of memory at which the routine could be located is a 16-bit address. We have an area in memory that concentrate all the addresses of the routines relative to peripheral 1, peripheral 2, peripheral K, and so on. And correspondingly, these addresses will be located at the high part of the interrupt address plus 0, plus 2, plus 2 time K. This allows to concentrate, as I said, in a table the set of the possible routine addresses relative to the
peripherals that are enabled to an interrupt request. The code of the CPU will read the specific address and will load it into the program counter, jumping into another area of memory into which the code for serving that interrupt will be executed.